sports meets life with an unbiased perspective. This is your wake-up call with Dan Tortora.
We're here with Dan Dakich. Obviously, you know him from ESPN 1070, The Fan, in the state of Indiana, known all throughout the state for numerous different things that you've done, and we'll get into some of those. How are you doing today, sir?
I'm doing great. How are you? Thanks for having me on.
Absolutely. Happy to have you on. And I know before we go anywhere here, you had spent some time in Syracuse and had the opportunity to do your show in Syracuse, New York, in my neck of the woods. And how did everything go for you there?
You were great, man. It went fantastic. The whole thing was good. Got a chance to watch Syracuse softball, and my friend Lee Ross, we've been friends for a long time, and watched a little softball and had a great love Syracuse. I did not know Syracuse was what Syracuse is. I thought it was a bigger campus and maybe a more inner city campus or urban campus, I guess. But hey, it's spectacular. It's great.
And where did you end up getting yourself some food here? Did she take you somewhere that's just unique to Syracuse?
I went to a place called Tully's, which was really good.
Yep.
And that was great. And let's see, where else did we go? About it. Dinosaur Barbecue was spectacular.
Yeah, Dinosaur Barbecue, obviously known across the country here. So it's good to know that when you make the trek to New York to Syracuse, you're getting some good eating while you're here.
Yeah, it was really good.
So let's look at your career and what you've done at Indiana University. You know, people remembering how you played up against Michael Jordan, you know, when you played the University of North Carolina. And when you go back in that history and you look at playing up against Michael Jordan, being coached by Bobby Knight, then going back to Indiana University, is it surreal to you to know that all of those things happened in your career and that you've been a part of so much history in Indiana?
Yeah, it's amazing to me. Nobody had ever gone anywhere out of my high school. I was a kid. I actually had to sit out a year of high school because I had a bone disease. So I didn't go between my sophomore and junior year, which ultimately ended up being a big-time blessing for me. And I had one leg that's smaller than the other, and I couldn't dunk the ball. And I couldn't jump off my right foot. So it is stunning to me that I was able to do that. I mean, you know, but when you look at it and then when you're there, you don't think of it that way. It's only when you look back. And so while we were there, it was what I expected to happen in my life. But, you know, at the time in Indiana, it was great. I mean, Indiana was as good a program as there was in the country. Won national championship in 76 and 81. Then I came in that fall with a group, and we were able to win the Big Ten, get to the Final Eight. But at Indiana, you know, winning the Big Ten and getting to the Final Eight doesn't get you at the big boy table. You got to sit at the little kids' table because you expected at that time to do more than that. You expected to win national championships. You know, you mentioned Mike Jordan, and you know, people truly still make a big deal about that here in Indiana, which is cool, which is, you know, really cool. But the fact of the matter is, at that time, in 1984, we were Indiana, man, and we were expected to beat North Carolina. You know, they'd beaten 2 years or 3 years before a national championship game. It was a big deal to us because we moved on in the tournament, but it wasn't a big deal to us that we beat North Carolina. That's what we were supposed to do at that time at IU.
Like you said, you're supposed to have those victories. That's the team that Indiana was in your time there and even before. Bobby Knight, having experience with him, being coached by him, you know, there's always that line of positives about Bobby Knight and people that he's helped, and then there's the negative side. When you were around Bobby Knight, what are you taking from him? Was it down the line, yeah, there's some good, yeah, there's some bad, or do you have one side where you really think, you know, he was this type of coach and never that type of coach that he's portrayed to be?
I love the man, and it fit me. It didn't fit everybody, but it fit me. My father was a high school principal, didn't swear like Coach Knight, but their mannerisms were similar. The thing I always tell people about Coach Knight is he was very fair. Like a lot of guys right now in college basketball, they get eight guys, seven guys, nine guys, and they play them, and then everybody else kind of stands around. That was not Coach Knight. You knew every day if you came to practice, and if you busted it, and busted it hard, you were going to get an opportunity to play. And what you did with that opportunity was up to you. So that's the first thing. Second thing is he's the funniest dude I've ever been around. I mean, he is a funny, funny guy. People don't see that. He doesn't like people to see that. And then from a basketball standpoint, the thing that I really learned was preparation. You know, how to go the extra mile, how to understand that, you know, this little piece of film that you're watching right now may be the difference in a one-point game, and making sure that you cover every base and making sure that your team is really well prepared. That's what I learned the most in terms of basketball. You know, motion offense, those things evolve. Pressure defense, those things evolve. But, man, the preparation is something that, I've taken with me in every facet of my life, including what I'm doing now.
Speaking here with Dan Dockage from ESPN Radio in Indiana, in keeping with Bobby Knight, seeing him now and what he's done, that he's an analyst, that he's breaking down the game each season for college basketball, when you see your coach out there, like you said, it was the right fit for you, he taught you, what does he do for the game now like he did for you back then?
Well, I think what he does for the game now is, he gives you a window into what a great coach looks for during a broadcast. I think that he... You know, he looks at the game differently. Most coaches do. Like, you know, and I, when I've sat down with people and, you know, watched the game, I'll say something and they'll go, damn, how'd you see that? And I said, well, you know, I spent 22 years in a film room. You know, you didn't. I mean, I never even had a life. I just, you know, watched tape every day all day. So he's giving people, I think, the insight of a Hall of Fame winning, second winningest coach now, I guess, in NCAA history. And I think people have really enjoyed it. I think that he's become a very good analyst. I think he's given people, again, just something different, something that maybe they didn't see that. And that's what you're supposed to do. That, you know, when I work the Tuesday night game, that's what I'm trying to do, and I know that's what he tries to do.
Being a basketball analyst yourself, you know, working Tuesday night game, understanding, commentating these games, when you have that experience behind you that you were a player, that you were under a coach like Bobby Knight that's known throughout the world, and at the same time that you were a coach yourself, what does that do for you? Because I know I played the sport of basketball, so when I commentated, you know, you understand the game, you can see these nuances of the game, the little intricacies that maybe other people can't see, and you can display those, not just on television, but also on the radio. What's it like for you to be on the commentating side after playing the game and coaching the game?
It's the most fun I've ever had in my life, other than playing. Like, there's no way that I'll ever have anything as fun as my high school and college basketball career. There's just no way, because, you know, playing is it for guys. And everybody understands that. And that's why guys get back into coaching, you know, because playing and competing are the things. But this is the most fun other than playing that I've ever had in my life. And the thing that I want to do in broadcasting, like, I don't care whether a fan base likes you. You know, I know how to get a fan base to like you. You just say nice things about their team. But that's easy. But my goal is that when people approach me, they say, you know, whether they enjoy it or not, that's great, but it's more, hey, you know, when you do a broadcast, I really learn something, and that's my thing. Everything else is great, good, bad, happy, or sad, but my thing is that. So, you know, it's the same way you approach it as a coach. The one thing that I learned very quickly is there's a hell of a difference between playing and coaching. Like, Coach Knight used to say this. He used to say, you know, if every player had to coach for a year before they got to play, they would be completely different. And that's right. I mean, that's really true. If guys had to, first year, redshirt, you got to coach, guys would have a completely different thought process. So that's a really good thing. And by the way, here's the other deal. And this is, you know, I mentioned Lee Ross earlier today, right?
Yeah.
One of the things about being an analyst that's really fun is going around and seeing other coaches. Like, Lee at Bowling Green did an unbelievably good job, and we've always sat down and talked coaching. You know, like, what would you do here? How did you handle discipline? Cell phones were coming into play. You know, how do you handle cell phones? How do you handle team, you know, things like that. And just watching her approach her team, was really the first time I had since she's been here. It was fantastic. It was great. And you can tell what a great coach she is. And that's one of the most fun things about being an analyst. You know, you go around, you know, I'm going to go to Purdue's practice. I'm doing Indiana's practice. I'll go to all these practices, and I'll see a different way to do it. I go to football practices. I go to softball. I go to Indiana softball practice. Indiana baseball coach, I go to his practice. So, you know, being an analyst is really fun because you get a different perspective. And if I went back into coaching, I think because of the opportunity to see someone like me or the opportunity to watch Tom Izzo's workout or whatever, I would be a much better coach.
And when you have those experiences, and we'll go into the guy that you just named last, Tom Izzo, I mean, this is a guy who, no matter where his team stands at Michigan State in the NCAA tournament, be it a 1 seed, a 2 seed, an 8 seed, a 9 seed, wherever he is, he's figured out ways to win. So when you're going in as an analyst, and like you said, if you ever stepped back into coaching, what does watching a guy like Tom Izzo help you to do? Because there's some men and women in this country that no matter where you place them are successful.
Let me give you Tom Izzo, and I'll go back to Lee, okay?
Okay.
Tom Izzo, you talk about what you learn from people. I'm watching Lee, and I'm watching Lee handle her players. And truthfully, Lee's not easy. Lee's not stern. But Lee handles her players exactly like Izzo does. And it's interesting you brought up Izzo because they'll come over and talk to her. Well, if you ever watch Izzo, they'll come over and put his arm around Izzo. Lee has a mannerism where she doesn't have to yell, she's going to get something done. And Izzo has the same thing. So it's amazing to me how really good coaches are so similar. That's the one thing I've really learned. So if you take a guy like Izzo, all right? Izzo understands college basketball. Like, I think Izzo and Calipari understand college basketball better than anybody in the country. They understand the importance of family, your assistant coaches coming back, getting jobs, helping them, expanding your coaching tree. They understand promotion. They understand media. Like, that's the other thing I've learned. Like, media isn't the enemy. Media is the friend of a coach if they're smart enough to use that friend.
Right.
So those two guys, like, they understand that, look, the postseason is it, so let's make sure that we are playing our best as we move through the season. So whatever that means, that may mean, you know, I don't know, playing guys that maybe aren't going to play later on, but seeing if they can help you in some game down the stretch. And you saw it a few years ago with Corey Luchers. So it's amazing to me, in Izzo's case, how much he has figured out college basketball. I think those two guys have figured out Calipari and Izzo better than anybody.
You mentioned John Calipari, who obviously in other instances stands on a different road than Tom Izzo does with how he's looked at. Tom Izzo, well-respected. John Calipari, well-respected. But at the same time, Calipari sometimes is looked at as that revolving door, doesn't care about education, push the guys through, just looking for talent, kind of that, you know, greased hair, salesman type approach. How do you view Calipari? Have you had conversations with him? Have you been around him? Because it seems like wherever you go throughout this country, the viewpoint of him is that he's kind of putting a blemish on college basketball.
Well, again, I like John, and I don't know John well. I did one of their games, and he was really good to me. He understands the media. But here's what I see when I see Calipari, and this is just, I really didn't pay attention to him all that much. When you're a head coach, you're doing your own thing. You know, I mean, you're in the soup every day trying to win a game. But the way I look at John is, first and foremost, he's a great coach. I mean, like, there are, and every coach will tell you this, there are five guys. Boeheim, I think, would be one of them. There are five guys that could put together a team like what John has been able to do and be as successful. You know, think about it. John's teams have never fallen apart. You're talking about freshmen. You're talking about guys going to the NBA. You're talking about massive egos. People around them, entitled kids. And at the end of the season, they're only playing really well, and they're probably a terrible shooting night from winning another national championship. They missed a bunch of 0-for-20, whatever it was, against West Virginia. So I sit there and I go, this dude is a great coach. Now, in terms of the one-and-done thing, you know, everybody has their style according to what the rules allow. And John, again, understands college basketball. He understands if you're going to have this one-and-done rule, then I'll be the guy to take the best and get him ready for the NBA. And the truth of the matter is, he's gotten them ready for the NBA. You know, and you can look at it one of two ways. You can look at it, well, it's all that's bad about college basketball. And you can't. You can do that. Or you can look at it as what college is for. You know, if a business professor could take a kid and in 1 year make him a multimillionaire, pretty good. You would take that in college. So, first thing I think of with John is he's a great coach. I mean, great, great coach. And then I go to the other stuff and, you know, we'll see what happens. You know, I'm here in Indiana. They just won a national championship. Kentucky did beat Indiana along the way, so everybody in Indiana is hoping that they wake up one morning, read the newspaper, and Kentucky's going on probation. You know, that's the Indiana thing here. But, you know, who knows? We'll see what happens. But in terms of coaching, I got to tell you, man, there aren't too many better. Your guy's right there, too. To me, and again, you have a different perspective studying coaches. And Boeheim, to me, is one of the great, great, great coaches of all time. And I don't think, you know, anybody can deny that. When he went to the national championship game in, what was it, 95 or whatever, with J.B. Reifsnyder as his starting center, I told myself, I got to watch this guy, because J.B. Reifsnyder was from Cincinnati, Ohio. I went to look at him as an assistant at Indiana. Purdue went, Ohio State went, Cincinnati went, Xavier went, Michigan State, Kentucky, everybody. And nobody thought he was good enough. Nobody. But he's starting center on national championship night, Monday night, where everybody wants to play. And I'm thinking to myself, say what you want about Jim Boeheim, but that dude can coach big time, because his teams don't really fall apart either. They may lose in a tournament, or at least fine. Okay, that happens. But when you're somewhere 30-some years, it's going to happen. But that dude can really get it done.
And Jim Boeheim, you mentioned him, where he stands right now. This will be his last Big East season. Are you hoping that when there's that transition to the ACC, because as you said, and I agree with you, that there's a few good coaches in this country that you know throughout. Jim Boeheim is known throughout. Calipari, like you said, whether or not he utilizes that one-and-done rule the right way or the wrong way, he's still abiding by the rules. So, you know, when he has those opportunities, he's taking that and turning that into championship-caliber teams in Kentucky. Tom Izzo, another coach, put him anywhere, and he's successful. When you look at a guy like Jim Boeheim, do you want to see him in the ACC with North Carolina, with Duke? Would that be something that would be special for this country, or would you rather see Boeheim hang it up after the Big East and say he helped build it to this point, and he helped make Syracuse what they are and make the conference what it is, and now it's time to go?
No, I hope he never quit. I want to see him, you know, against Roy Williams, and I hope Roy is going to be healthy. I want to see him against Coach K. No, I want to see Jim Boeheim do his thing for as long as he wants to do his thing, and because the respect I have for him. And, you know, look, guys love coaching, man. They do. I mean, when you get in a situation where you know you have a athletic director that's a good dude, you know you have a talent to love, you know, a fan base that's supportive. Fan base is tough. I mean, you know, fan base is tough. But, man, if he's coached, it's, you know, it's supposed to be tough. No, you don't ever want to leave. So I can't wait. It's sad what's happening in college basketball. Not necessarily relative to the conferences, but relative to the breakup of rivalries. Like, last year, I'm watching Georgetown, Syracuse in the dome, right?
Right.
And I think Coach Knight and Billis and those guys were doing the game. And I called up the head of ESPN. I said, hey, man, I want to do a game in the dome. Because it just got me fired up to watch that atmosphere. And then when I was there, you know, a few weeks ago, Lee took me around the Mello Center and all that.
Right.
And, you know, it's just odd. It's great. So, it's a new era. It's not what the Big East obviously was. It's not what everybody that's been watching college basketball for 34 years wants, but it is what it is. And I can't wait to see Coach Boeheim and Syracuse attack.
Speaking here with Dan Dockage from ESPN 1070, The Fan in Indiana, what was it about the Carrier Dome, that experience, that atmosphere, that makes you want to come back here and do a game?
Well, my first experience was awful. In 86, when we lost to Cleveland State, I was a graduate assistant. They beat us speaking on the brink here. But just watching it on TV, you know, again, you have a different point of view when you are a broadcaster. And one of the greatest things about ESPN is that Mike Tirico, who's a Syracuse grad, like everybody and their mother is a Syracuse grad on ESPN, by the way.
Yeah.
So they knew how school was ridiculous. In fact, I wanted to go in there. It was closed on a Sunday before I leave. I wanted to go in there and just, you know, touch the holy water or something, because everybody from the Newhouse School, Dave O'Brien, Mike Tirico, the two guys that I work with, man, they're Syracuse guys. But I just watching it and thinking, man, look at this place. Now, I understand there's a big difference between, you know, Syracuse, Georgetown, and, you know, Syracuse, whatever school, Lehigh. I get that, or whatever school you want to name. I get it. But still, it was such a cool environment. So, you know, I did that with Duke. I've been fortunate to do a bunch of games at IU or at Matthew Arena or down in Kentucky. But, you know, I just kind of made a bucket list for myself of places that I would like to do a game. New Pauley Pavilion. The one place was Syracuse. Just watching that game, I immediately called it and said, man, you got to get me on a game next year because that is awesome.
You bring up a guy like Mike Tirico, who came from Syracuse University, and everything that he's done, you know, being on Monday Night Football, being a part of basketball. You see his face, and, you know, the radio show that he had for a time with Scott Van Pelt also, where they were working together with ESPN. Everything that Tirico has accomplished, being close to him, working with him, what have you learned from him? What have you taken from Mike Tirico that's helped your career?
Oh, he's ridiculous, and so is Davey O'Brien. Those guys are so well prepared as broadcasters that, you know, I literally do this. I literally call up my guy at ESPN and just thank him. And I tell Tirico all the time, get the hell off my TV. Every time I turn my TV on, you're on my TV. Get off of my TV. I'm tired of seeing you. But he is such a great guy. He taught me, and I'm not very smart. I'm just new into this. But we're doing a game, and we're going to a break on something, man. He would sit on his iPad and give the fan some kind of information. I can't remember what it was about him, but some kind of information. And I just looked at him like, man, how smart is that? Simple, but fun. And so he's like, yeah, Dan, you know, he has been so great with me that I can't even begin to tell you. And so is Obie. Obie Dave O'Brien has been so great with me. And I'll tell you this, they are so proud to be graduates, alumni of the Newhouse School here, or there in Syracuse. I mean, they're so proud. It's nauseating, if you want to know the truth. But it's great. You know, it's they're so good. I mean, in fact, my daughter's like, hey, Dad, I want to, you know, she kind of likes what I'm doing, and she wants to be in broadcast. I mean, you got to go to Syracuse. Like, it's too cold. I said, I don't care. Who cares? I mean, you got to go, man. It's where everybody goes, so I don't know. I've really become a fan, again, mostly because of Lee and how much respect I have for her, but Mike, and mostly because of Mike and Lee and Obie, that, man, what a great school and place.
Because you brought up Lee Ross so much, and here on my show and with my company, I'm always trying to help Lee gain support, gain exposure, because what she's doing with that softball team, since she's gotten here, every single year, the team takes one more step forward, and they keep increasing their output. And she said, softball, this is supposed to be, in some people's minds, a Southern state sport. That's what it's supposed to be. You're not supposed to be able to play well up here. When you go down to the Arizonas and the Floridas and the Texas teams of the world, you're not supposed to be able to compete. And she's creating this element of, let them not know about us, let them not understand who we are, let them think the worst, and we'll go in there and we can shock them. And even if they do expect the best out of us, we're going to go in there and shock them. Lee Ross as a coach, number one, how do you define her? And number two, how important is it for people in Syracuse to pay attention to the softball team?
Well, I will tell you this, and I'm biased, because I've been friends with Lee, was friends with her ex-husband, the whole deal. But I started playing fast pitch softball 3 years ago, and I had a real appreciation for it. and watched it. But Lee Ross, to me, is the perfect combination of coach. Very smart, very competitive, crazy competitive. Not, you know, whether it's in recruiting or whether it's in whatever, coaching, making players better, whatever it is, she's ridiculously competitive. And if I tell this all the time, if I had a daughter, I would too, that played softball, there's no doubt I would kill to have her play for her because she legitimately cares about her players. And, you know, it doesn't happen all the time where players play for a coach. I mean, that's kind of an overused media type thing. If I lose you here, you call me right back because I'm going through an area that sometimes I lose people. But
okay.
She is so smart. She has a terrific staff. And it's just, she's fascinating to watch because she just handles herself as great coaches do. Like, when I was at Bowling Green, I went out and watched a softball game. And I didn't really know Lee. And I'm like, wow, does that coach handle herself well? Well, when Urban Meyer came into Indiana or to Bowling Green, he and I, you know, met each other, and I went to their first workout, and it was the same exact thing. Great coaches handle themselves in a certain way, and there isn't anything that Lee is going to do that isn't going to be for kids or for her program or to make it better. The problem she has is that she needs to host a regional. She's had to go to Arizona State or Texas A&M. She beat Arizona State this past year. But I'm telling you, and I've watched all kinds of coaches in all kinds of different areas. If I get back into coaching, the first thing I'm going to do is spend 3 or 4 days watching her coach her basketball or her softball team. I'm going to watch 3 or 4 days of Urban Meyer coach his team. That's the level that Lee Ross is on. And it's a fun game to play. It's a fun game to watch. It's faster than baseball. I played baseball at Indiana. I played, you know, all through high school and college or whatever. But softball is a more fun game now to watch because it goes quicker. And she's phenomenal. I mean, phenomenal at what she does. She's at Syracuse, New York, where they basically have had a program for, what, 12, 14 years, whatever. And Snow... But she takes that team into the top 25 every year, at least in the last 3 or 4 years. As you say, she keeps building. It goes down to Arizona State for the packed house, beats them, loses in the, you know, 2 out of 3 deal. But, I mean, what the hell? I mean, so, like I said, she's an ultra, ultra competitive and ultra, ultra great to her players, a mother type figure. And just as good a coach you'll find in any sport anywhere in college athletics.
Well, absolutely. And, you know, I definitely have to agree with you there in speaking about Lee Ross and the gem that Central New York essentially has just sitting here waiting on a field that's up on Skytop right by Syracuse University, representing Syracuse University, that softball team. And before I let you go here, speaking with Dan Dokic of ESPN 1070, The Fan, out in Indiana. I want to talk about one of your teams, the Indianapolis Colts, a team that you know all too well because you're covering them all the time. Peyton Manning leaves. Andrew Luck steps in. What's the atmosphere like right now? Is it still we believe in a little bit of Luck, or is it maybe we made the wrong decision?
No, here's the deal. They couldn't trade Peyton because it would have been a $32 million cap. If they kept him, they would have to pay him another $28 million. And they already paid him $26 million a year before for him not to play. So everybody understands what Jimmy Irsay did. Everybody understands that, look, Peyton is playing really good, and everybody wishes Peyton well, but they understand 10 years down the road, 5 years, 7 years, is what this is about. And Andrew Luck has done nothing but impress every single person that he has come in contact with and every single NFL person. So, no, there's no consternation. The problem we have right now in Indianapolis is not a problem, it's just sad, is that Chuck Pagano, the head coach, is battling leukemia and going to be hospitalized for a minimum of 6 to 8 weeks. And, you know, more than anything, our show and most other shows, you know, have kind of put the brakes on for a day or two just to talk about Coach Pagano and his family and his fight. So, but no, in terms of Andrew Luck, people understand what Jim Irsay did. And they respect it, and I think they're excited by it.
And you bring up Coach Pagano and the news that came out, the fact that he's going to be out here with a treatable form of leukemia, but he has to take some time away. And, you know, what has the atmosphere been like? You know, how have people responded to this? I know that there has been on Twitter that you can send letters over to Coach Pagano. You know, obviously Jim Irsay, who's always up on Twitter, has made statements. He went out and made a public address about it. As far as this franchise banding around Pagano, how is that, and then how's the community?
It's been great. I mean, that's what Indianapolis is, man. Indianapolis, Midwest City, the rallies. And people, Chuck Pagano, Kyle Griggs have done a great job of connecting with the fan base in a short period of time. And the way Pagano did it, and he said it very quickly, is relationships. He's a relationship guy, knows the janitors, knows everybody. And people have fed off that. And, you know, he's in his first year, so people aren't jaded by whether you've won enough or lost, whatever you've done. So, no, the support's been really, really good.
And just having him there on that sideline, now that he won't be there, what do you see from this Colts team? Because, like you said, Pagano's in his first season, Luck's in his first season. So how does this team respond on the field without having their head coach and having this new quarterback? Is this a team that's going to bounce back and really put some fight in? What have you seen established by this Colts team, both veteran and young, to tell you what direction you think they'll head in without their coach?
I don't know. I mean, you know, Epidover's interim coach of a talented team that had no leadership at Indiana in 08. And I've said on the air, it's going to be on the leadership. The coaches are going to coach, man. They're going to do a good job. Offensive guys, defensive guys, individual positions, they're going to do a good job. They're a good staff. But it's going to be a matter of leadership. And as Bruce Arians, who's the interim coach, said, man, our five-star guys, our guys have to step up.
Are you rebuilding right now in Indianapolis? Is that the feel of this, that, yeah, Andrew Luck's the number one pick, but that rebuilding element?
Yeah, 100%. Got rid of, you know, a bunch of guys that played. Got rid of Dallas Clark, Gary Brackett, Jacob Pam, a bunch of guys that played. It's absolutely rebuilding.
All right, and the last thing here I want to ask you before you go. Jim Irsay, is there anyone anywhere in the NFL that is on Twitter from a front office of the NFL more than this man?
No. He's great. He makes news. I'm sure he makes the media department crazy. He breaks news. He lyrics. He gets contests. No, and he's a good guy, man. I don't know him, but I like him. You know, as much as you can like someone without knowing him, so no, man, that dude's all over Twitter. I appreciate you having me on. Thanks a lot.
Absolutely, and hopefully we'll talk to you soon.
All right, buddy. Thank you.
Come in and be a hero to your family or coworkers and pick up a fresh, handmade Carvel ice cream cake from Carvel DeWitt. Why would you buy a cake from a grocery store that's weeks or months old when Carvel DeWitt has a fresh one waiting for you? Come in and taste a fresh difference. Carvel DeWitt. It's what happy tastes like.
Sometimes we can't help how we get injured, but we can help ourselves and how we get better. Hi, I'm Paula Carey from Carey and Daly Physical Therapy. I'm here on Wake Up Call to tell you that currently in New York State, you can be evaluated by a physical therapist without seeing your physician. Some insurance companies will allow up to 9 visits before a prescription is needed. At Carey and Daly Physical Therapy, our experienced staff will evaluate you and start you on a program appropriate for your injury. We know how important feeling good is to you. Let us help you improve your well-being by coming to see us at one of our 5 locations in upstate New York. Carey and Daly Physical Therapy, where we care about your body and are dedicated to helping you get well.
Find the location nearest you at CareyandDalyPT.com. That's CareyandDalyPT.com.